why do have so many people ended up being disappointed with their membership of the European community, of the UK in the European community?
Well, I think we'll wait to see on the 24th of June this year what the British people actually think about their membership of the European Union. And I think the reality is we don't really know yet. The UK is not a country that has a tradition of having UK countrywide referendums. We've only had three in our history. This will be the third. UK-wide, we had a Scotland referendum and some others. The first was the referendum, 40 years ago now, 41 years ago, about our membership of the European Union. So that was the last time that the British people were actually asked about what they think about staying in the European Union or leaving. And at that time, it was a clear vote to stay in. It was 67%, I think, to 33%. So we'll see where we are now, and we see where we've got to. David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, felt that it was right to give the British people a say on their, because the European Union obviously has changed a lot in the last 40 years, and he felt it was right to give the British people a say on that. And so he called the referendum, and he is now the British government's position is that the UK is better off, stronger, more economically sound and more secure inside a reformed European Union. So the British Prime Minister is campaigning for the UK to stay in. But as for what the British people think, I think we'll know that on the 24th of June.
But what do you think are the main conditions for your country to remain in the European Union?
David Cameron said in calling this referendum that he felt that there needed to be some reforms in the way that the European Union operates. Because, as I said, the organisation has changed in the last few decades. And so he said he wanted to try to negotiate some reforms with the rest of the European Union. So he spent the last year and a half trying to negotiate those reforms and agreed a deal at the European Council meeting in February of this year. And he agreed some reforms in the area of sovereignty, so more power for member states and decisions where possible taken at the level of member states, unless they need to be taken at the level of Brussels. Some reforms on economic governance to protect the interests of countries who are not currently in the Eurozone. Some reforms around competitiveness to make the EU operate in a more competitive way, more deregulation, smarter regulation so that it's easier for businesses to operate, and a deepening of the single market, particularly in digital and services as well as energy, and also conclusion of ambitious free trade agreements with other parts of the world. And then the last area was around some changes to welfare systems and to prevent abuse of welfare systems and that sort of thing. So he agreed these reforms with the rest of the EU member states, and he felt those were the conditions that would allow him to campaign for the UK to stay in and to recommend to the British people that the UK should stay a member of the European Union.
And there are currently a lot of European students studying in the UK. So what will be their future there? Because, you know, it's a lot harder to get a visa for this country. And what if the UK exits from the EU?
I mean, I think the truth is we don't know exactly what the circumstances would be if the UK were to leave the European Union. No country has so far left the European Union, so we don't know exactly what arrangements would apply. And it might be that there would need to be different arrangements with different member states and with different partners. But since this hasn't happened before, I think it's a kind of hypothetical question. We simply don't know what circumstances would apply in that eventuality. So I think it's difficult. I can't really say on that one.
What do you think would be the repercussions for the rest of the EU if Britain decided to leave the Union?
I guess that's for the other members of the European Union to say. I know that when I've been talking to colleagues here around the Czech government and others, the strong message I hear is that they believe that the European Union itself would be weaker without the UK as part of it. They also believe the UK is stronger in the European Union. That's the message I hear, certainly in this country, and I see that message coming from some other countries as well. But I guess it's for others to say what would be the implications for the European Union if Britain left.
So if the UK leaves, what other European countries would do in this case?
I don't know.
They depend economically on the...
Your guess is as good as mine, yeah. I think we don't know what would happen in those circumstances, because as I say, it's never happened that a country has so far left the European Union, so it's difficult to say. There are particular procedures that are provided for under the European Union Treaty which govern the process for a country leaving the European Union. Of course, it's never been tested so far. So if that were to happen, and obviously it depends on the result of our referendum, then there is a set procedure which would take 2 years or more or less, or but it's a procedure which would take a period of time to conclude new arrangements and work out just what would happen. And I guess it would then be also for the other countries to decide how they would react to the British referendum and what sort of arrangements they would conclude with the UK. But obviously this is all very hypothetical because we don't know what the result will be at this stage.
A lot of political analysts as well as politicians from the West are talking about Russia as an unpredictable actor on the world stage after Crimea's annexation. So what tools can the West use in order to bring Kremlin's leaders back to a predictable pattern of behaviour?
Well, obviously, Russia's annexation of Crimea did break a number of international commitments, and it has been condemned by a number of countries around the world, including by the UK. And we're working very closely with our partners, particularly at the level of the European Union, to put pressure on Russia and to try to change Russian behaviours. So, for example, we have a sanctions regime in place, an EU sanctions regime in place against Russia, which tries to encourage Russia to change its approach. And it's also important that we can reinvigorate our defence through commitments to an enhanced forward presence through NATO that would help to be and have a deterrent effect. And of course, also it means in the current circumstances providing some support, practical support and political support to countries that are experiencing destabilisation as a result of Russian behaviours. And therefore, I'm thinking in particular of the situation in Ukraine, of course. And we're obviously providing a lot of support in that area.
But has Russia changed her foreign policy after the sanctions?
Well, we'll have to judge over a period of time. But for the time being, those sanctions remain in place and we're keeping up the pressure.
And do you think it's a regional power or a world power about Russia? What do you think?
Russia's its own. Russia has aspirations in a number of areas, but for us the important thing is to make sure it respects its international obligations and commitments, and that's why we're keeping up all the pressure across a number of areas to make sure it does that.
We know Britain as a country of compassion, and why do the authorities from London refuse to accept the quota of illegal immigrants arriving in Europe and from North America, Africa, from Afghanistan, from Syria?
Well, Britain is doing quite a lot in this area. It's one of the leading donors in response to the crisis in Syria in terms of humanitarian assistance. We've pledged over £1.1 billion, British pounds, which is the UK's largest ever response to a humanitarian crisis. So we've done a huge amount in terms of providing humanitarian assistance and other assistance. And then also we are taking large numbers of refugees from the region, so from Syria and from the camps in neighbouring countries. We announced a while ago that we would accept 20,000 refugees over the next 5 years, so from the region.
And only legal ones.
Of course, yeah. And we're taking them from the region. We're not part... I mean, there were discussions around the EU about quotas and so on. We're not... The UK is not part of the Schengen system and those asylum requirements. So there wasn't really a question of us accepting a quota via that system. But we're certainly doing our bit and taking quite a large number of refugees from the region. And we've already taken... A number of those have already arrived in the UK.
When talking about Republic of Moldova, what do you think it will be its future, and what will happen with its membership in the European Union with this strong pro-Russian influence in the region?
obviously, Moldova is part of the Eastern Partnership group of countries, and so we're working closely to try to support reforms in the Eastern Partnership group of countries to help them to align their systems more closely with EU standards and norms, and to make sure that they can put in place political and institutional reforms that bring them closer to EU systems, which will make it easier for them to work much more closely with the EU. So we're part of that process, and we think that will also help countries, Eastern Partnership countries, including Moldova, of course, to become more stable and more prosperous. We have some funds that are available. The UK has some funds that we've shared with Moldova as well to help to move that process along. So I think a lot of progress has already been made. Probably some more still needs to be made, but we think it's on a good track.
So UK will eventually support Moldova to become a part of the EU?
I guess we'll see how those processes and reforms go, but certainly the objective is to bring Moldova as closely as possible into alignment with the EU and make sure that partnership and cooperation works as closely as possible.
And to what extent is press freedom important in a democratic society?
Oh, very important. It's a fundamental human right, and I think it feeds into that wider development objective of empowering citizens and empowering people and making sure they have access to independent and unbiased information. It's so important that it also engages citizens in managing their own processes and in having opinions, taking part in public discourse and political discourse. And it helps a country to operate more effectively. It helps in the fight against poverty. It helps with transparency, more accountability, and good governance. I think it's essential, fundamental.
And do you think the countries from the Eastern Europe have, at least some of them, have the press freedom?
I hope so. I mean, I see here in this country, it's difficult to comment in detail, but from what I see, there's certainly a lot of debate about a lot of issues, and that's one good sign. I can't comment on whether everything is perfect in all areas of the media, here or in other countries, really. But I do see plenty of debate, and that's one mark, at least, of progress in that area.
Well, and how was your experience in living in Czech Republic, and how it changed the perspective of the EU?
Well, my experience of living in the Czech Republic is very positive. I'm sure you know yourself living here. It's a beautiful country. Prague's a beautiful city, and I live in a beautiful house. So I'm very, very lucky here. It's great to be part of the European family of nations here. And I know that working with the Czech government very closely here and different parts of Czech society, we think in similar ways on so many issues. We have so many shared interests and approaches. I think the Czech mentality is very similar to the British mentality.
A very conservative one.
Well, very kind of pragmatic, I would say, and very similar senses of humour. But also we think very similarly in terms of competitiveness and free trade. We're both, the UK and the Czech Republic are both very open trading nations. So we have similar objectives there. We have similar approaches to our energy systems. For example, both rely on nuclear energy to some extent. So on so many areas, we work very closely within the European Union, and we think in similar ways. I feel, working here, I feel very much I'm in the heart of Europe, and of course the Czech Republic is kind of at the centre of Europe here, in Central Europe, and it's great to be here. So it's been a very positive experience, nothing but positive.
And from the time you came here until now, do you think it progressed or regressed?
I don't know about that. I think there's been good developments in some areas, less good developments in other areas. I guess that's always the case. It's hard to generalise, isn't it, with any country. But I think in general, the EU is, it's the Czech Republic and the UK have both worked closely together in the framework of the European Union and have definitely made progress in lots of areas to which we attach importance. And some of those areas are the ones that I spoke about earlier, where the British Prime Minister David Cameron wanted to see reforms and changes. And we found that we had a lot of support from our Czech friends in a lot of those areas because they too shared our objectives. So I think we definitely have achieved some forward movement in those areas, and working with the Czech Republic has been quite key in achieving that.
And something that came on my mind, yeah.
Just 2 minutes.
What will you wish for Moldovans, like its 25th anniversary from the independence?
For Moldova?
Yeah,
oh,
so
let's
what
think.
Would you wish?
The same I'd wish for, you know, all of us. A more a prosperous society, a free democratic society, free media, all the things we've talked about, and economic prosperity, the country moving forward and achieving all the things any country has the right to want to achieve. And it's great that we, the UK, as well as the EU, are able to try and assist that process. And we're pleased to see that progress is definitely being made.